Backstory. I'm your host, Alex Roberts. Heroes, I have a very special announcement. I will be at Arisha 2017, January 13th through the 15th in Boston, Massachusetts. There, I will be doing dramatic readings of erotic slash fiction live on stage at Games by Playdate's Ship It Like FedEx event on Friday evening. There will be burlesque performances, live smut writing based on audience suggestions, and me reading ridiculous things in my beautiful voice. If you are anywhere near the Boston area this January, come to Arisia 2017. I'll put a link to more info in the show notes. Other than that, I'm just going to be enjoying the con, and I've never done Arisia before, so if you're around, please do say hi. Now, for this episode, I'm joined by Olpeter Gjever, who you probably know from the cult classic surrealist RPG Idris B. We recorded this conversation in two parts, before and after he played in a LARP adaptation of that game. I'm pretty pleased with how the dual perspective came together. Let's jump in. I actually want to ask you about, you have this kind of fascination with dreams and with dream imagery.
Oh, yeah.
And it's clear how that comes through in your design sometimes. You know, Idris B is this very, like, sort of dreamlike, has this dream logic to it in terms of the fiction. Mm. But what do you think is the relationship between role-playing in general and dreaming?
I sometimes find, and maybe especially at LARPs, and especially at longer LARPs, that you enter sort of a liminal space, which means, like, often when I dream, or I used to keep a journal for a couple years. I haven't done that in some time, but I would often come up with LARP-related imagery. Not so much tabletop, but I would often be at a LARP or have, like, LARPer friends who were maybe in character, maybe just themselves, and I would often know that I was in a LARP, which I've thought maybe says something about how it affects, a LARP will affect the mind in maybe some of the same way that a dream does, or that you're... you know that it's, or you have an awareness that it's not the real reality. But I'm babbling a bit.
but I know what you mean. It kind of is in that place between the imaginary and the actual.
Yeah, and I think this word liminal, which is kind of a fancy word, has something to do with the original meaning has something to do with a border state. Yeah, it says there on Wikipedia, our source for the truthiness. In anthropology, liminality is the quality of ambiguity or disorientation that occurs in the middle stage of rituals. When so it's like if you're going through some kind of manhood ritual to become a hunter or whatnot, it's when you're like shed your old self or your previous role in society, but you have yet to pick up like the symbolic tools of your new thing and go all in. And I think maybe that's what we're doing in LARP. We're exploring the state where we leave ourselves behind, but not quite.
Yeah. Do you think LARPing can be transformative then? Do we change ourselves? Can we change ourselves when we're role-playing?
I thought a lot about that for many years, and I was into something called chaos magic. Mm-hmm. There's a book by a guy called Phil Hine called Condensed Chaos, and he writes about how you can take on different. He calls it is either invocation or evocation. I think it's evocation, mm-hmm. He says it in an esoteric contest, but I've always thought that sounds a lot like what we're doing in role playing, that we're taking on different roles. And I was thinking, okay, how can I use this stuff that I'm doing anyway as a hobby in my daily life? And I found that the structures of my own personality and psyche are very hardwired and hard to budge. So instead of actually achieving some of that through role playing, it took more like 4 years of therapy and daily medication.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've often wondered if maybe LARP experiences feel much more profound than they are. They feel transformative because there can often be like this emotional intensity.
Yeah, I agree. It's in that little space, especially with longer LARPs, I find. We're such good friends, and we'll be friends forever after this LARPs, and we're having such a fantastic time. And then it goes like 2 weeks, and you forgot it. You forget your crushes, and you forget your that friendliness, and maybe the dude turned out to be kind of a douche outside of character, right?
Yeah. Have you ever had the experience of having like a huge crush on someone in game, and then you try to connect with them after, and you're like, where did it go? What happened there?
I was married to a woman at a kind of a fantasy LARP, and after the LARP, we stayed together in the tent and held hands and things, and we were together for 1.5 years. And I think also there has been, I remember more a specific case of being like thinking of a guy who during the LARP he was. I thought he was very, this is a good guy. He's such a stand-up guy and helps out in the kitchen and all kinds of things. And he's nice to talk to, and he seems to care about me or my character or whatnot. And after the LARP, it turned out he was kind of standoffish and kind of a like, you know, put-down nerd. So you can be disappointed. But I've had the opposite, I've gotten to know people in character who I later on am on friendly terms with, and that's really the first time I met them was in character.
Because I think you do learn something about people when you LARP with them. Whatever it says something about what they think, right? What they think is funny, or they think is heroic, or they think is right or wrong, or good or villainous.
Yeah, I think so. But you have to be careful about that thing, because if someone is playing your antagonist, for instance, and they're giving you a hard time for the whole LARP, and maybe that's the first context you really have any contact with this individual is when they have the role on. I think it's important to check yourself also during the LARP and just remind yourself he or she is playing a character, right? But that's maybe that wasn't what you were.
No, I'm just poking and seeing what comes out. This is all good.
Yeah.
I got to play Old Friends 2 nights ago, actually, very recently.
Cool.
Which is the sort of ghost. It's really hard to describe because ghost hunting LARP makes it sound kind of exciting and adventurous when it's really about these people who used to be very close to each other and haven't seen each other in 20 years. And are trying to resolve all of these loose ends around their relationships to each other and to a good friend of theirs who died.
Yeah, there's a lot of like we've been maybe a bit ham-fisted with all the troubles that they have. Everything is very sad and bleak in this group of ex-friends.
we still find some time for humor. I mean, in that way that people who used to know each other really well can have, you know. But I think the most interesting thing about that game is the way that it uses the mask. Where did you encounter mask work, and how excited were you to get mask work into a LARP?
I can't recall. I know both. I think Jason actually has more direct experience doing improv than me. I've read the book and I've taken some classes, and I'm very interested in the techniques and how they apply to LARP and role playing, but I think maybe it was my suggestion. I'm not really sure. And this isn't, or what we're doing with the game is probably mask work super light. I know did you read the book by Impro?
I've not actually read Impro.
There's a book from 1977, which is 3 years after Dungeons & Dragons comes out, right?
Interesting.
It's for theater people and theater students. And for the first two-thirds of the book, it's basically advice on not blocking, accepting suggestions, reincorporating status games and things like that that makes complete sense to you as a role player when reading it.
Mm-hmm.
But the last third of the book Rocky is about mask work, and he waxes poetically about all the effects of trans and how you can almost like communicate with these masks, and it goes very, it's very hippie-ish, right? So when reading that, I was like, okay, Johnson, you made sense in the first 150 pages, but this stuff, I don't know. And then at one Knutepunkt, I took it was a workshop that was really about something else, I think. And he did just briefly sampled mask work with half masks, mm-hmm. as a warm up, and he had a mirror and things, and we couldn't speak, but we could make sounds. And after or during that, I was like, okay, Johnson, I see what you mean. You were right again.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's I think it's the physicality of it is very important. With some masks, you can restrict the visual field. You don't see as much.
Right.
Your face will feel different, and you know that it will look different. There are different approaches on whether or not you know what the mask looks like before you when you're mm-hmm. working with it. We also did now this Thursday on sort of ongoing improv, weekly improv thing for role players. We did some mask work with whole masks and complete silence. And it was very strange how poetic the effect was. Just looking at those tableaus with these people, and you can't see their facial features, and you can't do any of the work with the facial features that you're used to.
Mm-hmm. And your facial expression doesn't just express to other people, it also informs your own emotional state, right?
Absolutely, yeah. It's I often forget to. I discuss sometimes with. No, I had a discussion with Astrid where she basically accused me of having like a resting bitch face, you know. And it's absolutely true, and that's mm-hmm. a consequence of being a Norwegian living on the eastern in the east southeastern part of the country. We're very sort of introvert and keep to ourselves and we need a lot of license or a lot of. I don't talk to people on public transport and so on.
Right.
But I think it's a very interesting question that I didn't answer in a very interesting way, how LARP or role-playing can affect our mm-hmm. Ourselves.
Right.
I've read somewhere, and I don't know if it was like a scientific source or one of these occulty mm-hmm, sources, mm-hmm. but it said that it takes 30 days to establish a new habit. And that just rang true to me. That if you start doing something every day, I gave my friend a ritual once because of a game we were playing, and I said, just you will say thanks every morning, maybe every evening as well. Just turn towards the sun and say thanks. And he said he did that for a while, and I don't know, it meant something to him. And that's that can be completely secular, or you can say thanks to God, or you can say thanks to just
whoever's out there.
Yeah.
Whoever's in charge of this, thanks for it. Yeah, totally. And when that becomes a habit, and when that becomes a practice, right? Like that's the thing about spirituality is it's about spiritual practice. Mm. That can be really, really powerful.
And rituals, mm-hmm. doing small things. I was talking to, we were at the cafe just now with Ayrik and Chin, who are friends from the LARP scene. We were talking about mindfulness and meditation. And I mentioned that after us three move here, I've started making more dinner more often and being like cooking more. And I enjoy that very much as a meditational sort of activity because I can't be fiddling with the phone for every 3 minutes.
Right.
And I can still have some kind of thought process, but I have to constantly like return to the food, return to the recipe. I use recipe all the time.
And so do you find that focuses you or makes it easier to focus in general because you have this practice of engaging in something that's very... that demands a certain degree of your attention?
I think it gives me more focus in general that I eat better.
Right. Which people can underestimate, right? Like when it comes to mental health, I really don't think that people appreciate enough how much just like drinking enough water and eating food that has good stuff in it and moving your body around makes a difference.
That's something they like at the start of many Norwegian, or actually I don't want to go to fantasy LARPs, but at a couple fantasy-ish would see LARPs I've been to, that's one of the first things they remind everyone is drink water and use sun cream. Like how you get through this LARP thing.
Yeah, I went to Magiscola, which was in Richmond, Virginia, and it was very, very hot there. And coming from a bit further north, I really didn't appreciate how hot it would be. Like I thought I knew what a hot day was like, and it turns out I definitely didn't. And they were so, so insistent from the very beginning that like there will be water everywhere. Drink water. If you are thirsty, it's too late. Drink water. Yeah. Because it's so easy to forget about stuff like that. And I think we think of like our health and particularly mental health as requiring these sort of like, oh, I've got to, you know, meditate and do this talk therapy and read these books and whatever. And that stuff can be cool. But like, honestly, it doesn't super matter a lot if you've not had like 3 square meals and a shower.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I usually tell. Like, I don't go giving unsolicited advice to depressive people who are having to ask for it, right? But if someone asks, I will say, eat regularly, eat 3 meals, drink water, drink more water than you drink alcohol, get sleep at regular intervals, like basic self-care stuff. And the meds and therapy and things can come on top of that and be very useful, and maybe in some cases be completely necessary, I would say. But if you don't have that foundation of just being a bit kind to yourself and your body, because you're a physical, we're all physical, you know.
Yeah, we're embodied, we're bodily. You can't really get away from that. I want to go back to some of what we were talking about improv. Because you have this great, great essay in the new Itresby Menagerie about saying no. And this is very gratifying for me to even see the title of, because I think people who learn a really small amount about improv are just like, yes, and. The whole ethos of improv is just yes, and adding and accepting. And I think it's very difficult for people to get a sense of when actually refusing or requesting something different or saying no is the right thing to do. And even if I get a sense of when that is the right thing to do and feel that I'm permitted to, it's harder to do. Like that's harder to enact than accepting in many ways.
Yeah, there are some thin like lines between blocking and rejecting and what you may call a more constructive form of editing or declining, or I don't know. Again, with the editing, what we're doing when we're editing is saying no to a bunch of stuff, right? And I think with improv, when they do their shows, we have a theater here that is great. It's called the Second Theater, and it's improv people, and it's very idealistic. But they usually, I've seen long form there as well, but they usually run very short scenes. And then it's kind of fire and forget, and okay, maybe it didn't work, and then you honk the horn or you clap or like yeah, I failed, it was great. And then the next scene, right? which is great. It's a very powerful, fun energy to that. But in role playing games and in LARP, we're sort of stuck with the ideas we brought to the table 3 scenes ago or last session. And if you allow something, and I've done that in several Itresby things, that you allow something that is just too weird, or it was too like Magnus still complains that I let 2 demons like eat his character and shit him out and then start rebuild him. Uh-huh. He thought that it was hard for him to to get into like how the character would be after that experience, which I can understand, right? So if I had empowered Magnus to maybe have some of these tools that both Magnus and I are very skeptical of, and these they're Matthias's tools from Archipelago, the phrases, like, try another way, please. Don't let the demons eat me.
Right. Yeah. Also, they, because I've not actually played HRSB, but I have played in games that used the resolution cards. Right. These cards, for listeners who don't know, these cards that resolve a conflict with words like, yes, but this happens, or like, not quite, but you do get this piece of it, or instead, this happens. What's the origin of those cards?
In 2007, I was in Brazil doing last edits on HRSB instead of being outside in the sun and on the beaches. I was stuck in my hotel. And I saw on our web forum that we used to use that Matthias had posted this idea. Same guy with the Archipelago game, right? It posted the idea for the resolution cards based on probably on improv. It seems like distilled Johnson in a way. And I thought, okay, we're missing the system we used to have for HRSB. I came up with when I was 21, 22, and it was basically think of a number system, because I hate making, I'm not good at making these systems, right? So it was, okay, I'm climbing the wall. Okay, what do you have in climbing? It doesn't say on my character sheet. Okay, what do you think? Given what you know about your character, make up a number between 1 and 7. That was the system. and instead, when I saw these cards he posted, or these just phrases almost, I thought, yeah, perfect. This is great. Matthias, can we use it? He said, yes, sure. I love HRSB. He'd been helping out from the start and rooting for the project. So that's how that happened. And he later on used it and implemented it in Archipelago. And Jason has been very, he really liked those cards, and he's doing some adaptions, and he's been developing it like that technology further. Mm-hmm. The chance cards of HRSB are Martin's idea, and very early on. I remember meeting in some pub in Oslo where he was trying to explain the concept, his idea of the chance cards, and I couldn't for the life of me then in 2001 to figure out what he meant, how this was supposed to work. But thankfully, we gave it a shot and it worked. And again, thankfully, it wasn't until 2004 that Matthias told us, oh, hey, guys, there's something called the Whimsy cards that were made by Lion Rampant in the early 90s that work almost the exact same way as your chance card invention. Mm-hmm. And I was, oh, that's great, Matthias. Thanks for telling me. So I stole a few of those cards.
Reinterpreted.
Yes, that's the word, yeah. Reincorporated.
Yeah, reincorporated. Exactly. Accepted and reincorporated. Stealing is an important part of game design. You had this great interview with Analog Game Studies that I'll probably put a link to in the show notes, where you said, like, yeah, you know, when the Norwegian scene first emerged, we kind of decided that, like, well, if someone stole our idea, then, like, good luck to them. Hopefully they'll publish it before I do, because it's a lot of work.
Yeah, good. We were thinking a bit about that in early 2000s. He was working on Draug, a game in Norwegian. We were working on HRSB in parallel. We were playing each other games and in each other's campaigns. And it was kind of a legitimate question. It's like, what do we do if something, one of your ideas, is a perfect match for my game, or vice versa? And we just agreed among ourselves to say, well, let's steal like ravens. And I think as long as you do it with some kind of blessing and credit, then it's cool. And of course, if I don't know, if you showed me your thing you were working on, and I saw some tech in there that was like, oh, this is brilliant. This is like, this will change the script. then it would be polite if I asked you first, I think. But
In that same interview, you mentioned the way that a lot of the Norwegian game designers kind of connected over this web forum, and that was like really central to what everyone was doing, and everyone, again, playing off each other's ideas. And that made a lot of sense to me because Old Friends, which is a great game, you and Jason made this game together without ever meeting face to face. And that is so interesting to me. How did that partnership appear, and how did it work?
We haven't even, I suggested at some point, hey, Jason, maybe we can do like a Skype or something, just talk over some of these concepts. He didn't respond to that. We just kept, I don't know, we kept shooting mails back and forth. He's, what's the word? Like, he's very, kind of very precise. Like, he goes in, and maybe it's been 2 weeks since I heard from Jason, because he's also working on shitloads of other projects. But he goes in, and he just does something that is so right, and then I can maybe go in and fill out a few card texts or make some suggestions for the the playbook, like the instructions. And we had some, we started out, and I did like a Google Plus post, which was just like, I don't know, like, oh, let's try this out and see what people say. Was back in May 2015. I think we were actually in Chicago visiting Astrid's sister, and I just like, what game designers would you like to see make something together? Was my like pitch, and he was there, and he said, "You and me, let's make something." And I was, well, wow, that's, he's like an experienced author. That would be interesting. Yeah, let's try it. And I think I pitched the basic, like the very basics of that ghost hunter thing, and then we pitched it to first Stockholm, and then they turned it down, and then we pitched it to Fastival. So we had sort of a deadline for it and some structure. We knew the format, like where it was going to be and so on. And then we started shooting ideas back and forth. I don't know. I can't now remember like who came up with exactly what, but it felt like a very sort of equal partnership. I think the next time I do something like that, I want to clarify a bit more, like what is the what is the workflow? How do we work? Is there someone in charge of the project? Do we have deadlines along the way and so on? Because yeah, and I think the way he works, and I've seen Paul Shigi recommend the same approach, is that you have a bunch of ideas, and you have a bunch of project, and you'll just see what sinks and what floats, right? And I think that's great if you're working solo, but when you're working with someone, it could be useful to make some more like specific agreements. Okay. But in the end, I think we made I'm proud of the game, and it seems like people are getting a kick out of it, and I think we made a cool thing that is in some ways a bit different, and in some ways it's just cobbled up a lot of elements from here and there, like the mask from the improv. Maybe the ritual stuff is a bit inspired by Nordic LARP and his keyword prompt thing is something he's been working with earlier, and I thought, I'm sure it's been done 100 times, and that's not important, but I think the thing we say about like the one-to-one, like the room you're in is the room where this occurred. That has a certain, it's a very simple trick, but it's a good trick because it gives you instant 360-degree illusion, right?
I hadn't thought of it from that angle, but you're totally right. You play this incredibly detailed, super high production value LARP.
Yeah. It's amazing what they can do with LARP these days.
Wow. The technology. I actually played it in our basement.
Yeah.
I just moved to a place that has a basement, and it's kind of dank and damp and a bit cold down there. And there's like stone walls. Pretty sweet set dressing.
Sounds perfect.
For a spooky ghost possession.
Did you unlock the shouting?
I don't know. There was some shouting, but this idea of like unlocking and finding, it makes me think that we didn't unlock that particular combination of cards.
Oh, no, no. No, it's just my joking way of saying that. The thing is, I read something. It was a guy who used to illustrate an X card example with, he had to X card someone during this game because it was getting too shouty. And he was getting worried about the neighbors. And I thought back to my 3 playtests in January this year, January. And they all, there was, yeah, I was a bit worried about the neighbors too. And what I mean about, it's kind of an emergent property because we didn't write anything about that, or we didn't give specific instructions to be shouty. But now I've heard about these two examples, your game and this French guy's game and my 3 examples, and a lot of the examples at Fastball got quite shouty, which, I don't know, it's natural to the topic, and there's a lot of conflict. There's strong conflict between the characters, and it's quite extreme. It can become quite extreme, this character that emerges from the mask.
I really, really like the way that the mask is presented and used. Like, there's a really specific ritual around how you put it on and when you put it on. You know, the fact that you turn away from people, apply the mask, kind of go through a couple of mental things, and then turn to the group. I hope it kicks off more people wanting to be like, oh, I want to play with this in my game. I want to incorporate mask stuff in the next game that I do.
I've been picking up some signals that it's interested people to see how they can take this further or maybe do something with it. We were contacted by a Danish guy, I think this week who facilitated it at Fastival. And after that, he's been running it with a local Black Box group. And I think what he was considering now was maybe making a play out of it, maybe with an audience or something, which, oh, cool. Great. Yeah. That's fun.
Yeah, when people adapt your work into other mediums, that must be kind of fun. That must be exciting.
Yeah. I'm going to something I've sort of dreamed about, but haven't. I also knew I wouldn't bother to organize it myself, is an Idris B LARP, long like over a couple of days.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you about that, actually. So are you going to get to be a player in the LARP version of your own game?
Yes, and they've made up some group that I haven't heard about before, but that sounds perfect to play. It's there are word nihilists.
Word nihilists?
Yeah, they want to destroy some words. I don't know.
That's exciting. What kind of LARP is this going to be? Because... you know, the book has these beautiful, really evocative illustrations, and it has a really distinctive visual style. Is this going to be like a high costume, like 360-degree immersion LARP?
I think people are... They're borrowing... In Bergen, you have a lot of old wooden buildings. Mm-hmm. And I think they've borrowed actually a kind of a museum that we get to play in. And it's a museum that they used to show how things used to be in. Like, they stashed the houses with original, like, old stuff. So it's a perfect location for us. I think it's, like, 4 houses on a cobbled street up in Woodhouse area. And, it's full on with the costuming. I expect people will be... like dressed up. It's not like Black Box or Short LARP, just like symbolic props. Mm-hmm. And I think the hat will be a hat. It won't be like a folded newspaper or something.
Yeah. that sounds really fun. What are you looking forward to about LARPing in Idris B?
I hope I get to just sit back and now and then and just like take in the people milling about. And I know there's at least one of the characters is from the book, as a character Martin wrote, as an 87-year-old artist called Juliet Forbes. And she's an artist of life, so she her art is her whole like existence and life. So it's kind of fun to actually like meet that character, right?
Right. Yeah. You know, Itrefi has like a really distinctive style, but it's one that I think people have had a hard time nailing down exactly. It gets called surreal or surreal light, or sort of noirish in this sort of 20s way. You said once in an interview, thankfully, no one has ever accused it of being steampunk, which is some pretty supreme shade.
these LARP, there seems to be a steampunk scene in Bergen. So these LARP people have broken this, but yeah. I don't mind steampunk. It seems a bit repetitive, and it doesn't really appeal to me as an aesthetic. If you think about those movies, I don't know the director, but they're fairly well known. It's The City of Lost Children and The Delicatessen. I think it's
The
same guys who made Amelie from Montmartre.
Right.
Those films are a strong sort of background radiation, but also with a lot of other things. We worked on that game for 7 or 8 years, you know, before we managed to turn it out. And it's full of, it has dreams, actual dreams we had wrote down. And it has, I think there's some odd philosophical stuff. I think my motive when we were making it was, I think I had sort of an ideological agenda, like a role-playing ideological agenda, because when I encountered these games when I was 9 or 10, I saw such potential. I thought this is like the greatest. I got one of the first things I saw was a fighting fantasy book. Those were like choose your own adventure. Text-based, you'd go from side to side. And when I was 9 years old and found that in the used or like the old discount bin at some local bookstore along the coast of Norway, I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. It was a bit like, actually, you know that book, The Neverending Story?
Yes, yeah.
I love that, of course, as well. And this guy, this Baltasar book's main character, was very easy for me to identify with, I guess you could say. And with the fighting fantasy book, it was almost like it was a step up, right? It was an actual interactive book. And then I, later on, like a kid in the neighborhood, this was kind of big in Norway among people my age in the late 80s, early 90s. So it would be like Dungeons and Dragons and a similar game from Sweden. But still, I still have a hard time with the rules and the all the like check table 3.2 and contrast with like your percentage rating of your crossbow. And I was like, do we have to have all this shit? Can I just, you know, play? And now that I'm older and wiser, I would say that, of course, some people enjoy that stuff, and there are some very enjoyable aspects to those things, but we made a game that was more oriented towards, it's almost like a dream, as if role-playing games as a hobby grew out of improv instead of board games or miniature games, right? Just to sound the drum a bit.
So you're making these alternate history role-playing games.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where we all read impro instead of, played a bunch of war games.
Yeah, let's call it that. We started playing Shadowrun again. I can never escape. I always get drawn back. And I'll be playing fucking Mage sometime soon.
How does this shit happen? I've actually never played Shadowrun. It's the setting's kind of amazing.
It's dumb. No, I'm kidding. No, I'm in bad company. You know, it's these guys who slang their drugs and
right, yeah. peer pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's well, joking aside, I would say that these are guys I've played with since I was 18, 19.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still definitely the some of the people I would absolutely want to play with, because we have a good jam and we know each other, and it's the social aspect is also very important with this stuff. It's not just like creating art with all your new friends. It's also getting together with friends that you know and like and have a lot of history with.
Yeah. And there is, I mean, ultimately we have to play these games with other people. And so sometimes you do kind of make a choice between who do I want to play with and what do I want to play, and kind of allowing one of those. It's nice when those things line up, but one of them actually is a tiny bit more important than the other one sometimes.
Yeah, I think with a LARP, for instance, I think I still prefer to have at least, I don't know, a 1/4 or 1/3 or whatever, some players that I know. But something that always appealed to me with LARP was that it's a way of getting to know so many, like, fun, great new people that share your interests. And
yeah, it is a really, really cool way to meet people, I have to say.
Wonderful.
Yeah, that's great. What a lovely start. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
I had to have you back because now you've played in the ITRASB LARP.
Yes.
And I just have to know, I have to know what it's like to play the LARP version of a game that you made.
It was kind of surreal in a very positive way. I thought they'd created a lot of new content and written, the majority of the characters were new, and they had some new concepts and some new groups or organizations that the characters could belong to and so on. But I felt it all felt very true to the spirit. Did you have a look at the pictures?
Yes, I did see the photos, and they were very. They all seem to have this lovely kind of muted color palette too, which felt very, I don't know how much of that was post-work and how much of that was present in the set design.
I think she did a fair amount of work afterwards on the photos. And I guess that's kind of the tricky thing with LARP documentation, is when the shots that come out of it are almost, if they almost look like movies or something, right? And that's very flattering for us as players, but at the same time, it's maybe not, in one way it communicates the reality of the game, because it's that when it's at its best, that's what it feels like. But yeah, you know.
I know exactly what you mean. I have a friend who's a graphic designer, and she used to work at Muscle and Fitness magazine. And you do so much airbrushing when you work for any magazine, but she talked about airbrushing these bodybuilders and erasing away all of their imperfections. And she talked about it like, you're not just fooling the reader into seeing these people a certain way, you're making other people see them the way they see themselves.
Oh,
these
yeah.
bodybuilders are like so self-obsessed and like obsessed with perfection, right? That you're actually the last phase of the work that they're doing to like express this like inner thing that they have. But I think we're talking about a similar thing when with LARP documentation.
It's an interesting take. I think someone in this Knutepunkt Nordic LARP scene thought that, or hadn't said something in a discussion once that was about, I miss the imperfections of the LARP. I miss kind of seeing the like the sneakers on people's feet, or the car in the background that shouldn't really be there, or things like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
What, you know, do you hear that sound?
Yes. Yes, that is my partner coughing his lungs out.
Oh, great. Then it's two of us.
Yes, that is a normal sound. That's the third participant. I mean, speaking of Speaking of the external world slipping into your recording and infecting your narrative, right?
But I should. What more do you want to know about the LARP or the experience
for
me?
I want to follow this thread about documentation because I think a lot of LARPers have this instinct that we want to record and we want to be able to express to other people how powerful or how beautiful or how cool this experience was. But then we've all got the sense that it hasn't quite been expressed yet, or we're not sure what is the best way, you know, because I think a lot of times photography of LARP feels really inadequate because you're like, oh, it didn't, I know it looked like that, but it didn't feel like that. But then you see really, like, have you seen the photos from Convention of Thorns?
It's that Beechard guy from Sweden, right?
Yeah. Where they're just like gorgeous and unbelievable. The costumes are so great. But, and then at the same time, I'm like, that also kind of gives people a slightly not quite right impression of what LARP is too, because it almost never looks like that. But then I kind of want people to see that too. And then is that what it feels like? Or like, yeah. Anyway, I would love to get your thoughts on that.
There's been a lot of discussion that I've only followed superficially for the past maybe 10 years about LARP documentation. And it's various things. It's the ethics. Having people be informed that there will be an in-game photographer getting their permission for future publication, which was done in this case. I didn't remember that at all, because I always say, like, I don't mind being on photos, so I always just click yes and forgot about it. But of course there are some players might have good reasons not to want to be on pictures. That could be several things, right? I didn't hear about any kind of drama here, but there were many underage players, many young players. So I took extra care because I wanted to post these photos in the Idris Bee Facebook group. And I actually wanted to be able to use them for Kat Jones's article in the Menagerie about costuming, because we didn't have illustrations for that, and these were perfect because they're from an actual Idris Bee LARP, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I had to go a few extra rounds. I went through the organizers and made sure that I had permission to use pictures of the kids and so on. Check with the kids, check with the parents, just like I do in my job for a certain type of articles, right? But more as like aesthetically speaking, one part of me certainly prefers that there's one dedicated professional or just like really good at taking pictures in-game photographer, rather than having all these like blurry cell phone shots that are taken sort of clandestinely during the game, or these like 20 versions of family photos before and after the LARP also taken by non-photographers. Because I also have like you pointed to, like, an interest in LARP looking good, if we're gonna. But another part of me is maybe more aligned with this Finnish guy I talked about, and like it's not perfect. We don't look. Not every one of us is a like rock star and have a perfect costume and so on. And so a part of me, like, really likes that kind of the whole do-it-yourself ethos, both of what we're doing here now in the linen, in your linen closet with your with your god man coughing in the background, but also at the LARP itself, right? It's not perfect, and we're not professionals when we're doing this. Of course, some of us will have actual professional skills, but.
Right. And I think, yeah, representing that is important too. Like, it's not a movie set. Like, it's not a movie. We're not making a movie. We're LARPing. It really is very different.
Yeah.
Okay. The other thing I want to probe a bit more into the LARP experience, the Idris Bee, I wonder if you knew going in what you would see or experience that would make you go like, oh, this isn't this isn't HSP, this isn't my game. Like, do you know what you would have encountered to say, like, oh, this doesn't feel right?
I'm sure I could construct something, but a part of the spirit or the ethos of HSP is, and that we repeat so many times in the book that some readers have like been almost a bit annoyed, is that it's make it your own. It's your city now. You have to go and just take these concepts and run along with them. So what pleased me was that they've done exactly that. They've made their own content. There were like a few characters that were from the book, and I could hear one thing I really liked was hearing, just like overhearing discussions about where there's this mix of concepts I came up with when I was 23 years old, or that Martin made. Or I could open a newspaper and read about the fable tooth tiger that Martin described several years ago, which has a certain, of course, a magic, and I was very very charmed by. And this has also been for me sort of a daydream that I haven't invested anything in making a reality. But I've thought for a while that, well, that's a fairly good idea. Make an Etrus Bularp that I could that could work, and I'd love to see that happen. But I also have a huge amount of respect for the handcraft of organizing a LARP. It's a lot of work. These people have been working for over a year, while the main organizer and you know, it's part time. They have jobs. They have families and Murphy strikes, and so I'm always just very impressed that LARPs get off the ground at all, even if it's not like a you have a castle in Poland,
right? And that event style, I think that can be intimidating for people, but people are doing it. It's happening. And it happens more than once. I mean, do you think they're going to run the HSP LARP again?
Yeah, actually, they're taking one grouping. Some of the players are taking one of the groups, which are these like wanderers, like intrepid explorers who go into the fringe zones to check out all the reality falling apart things. And they're making a new LARP about that in January. Which is like a one-day LARP, so yeah. So it won't be. I've been to some remakes, like once or twice. I've been to remakes of Norwegian LARPs. One was like an interesting historical LARP set in 1823 about the various political frictions that you had back then with the nationalism and the influence from Sweden, and how about the remaining impulses from Denmark, and we were under Sweden, right, and so on. And I went to a remake of that maybe, I don't know, maybe 7 years later. I don't know. It's good that they make the possibility that there's a very interesting one next year that's maybe you've even heard about. It's called 1942. Where in the year 2000 they staged this LARP, and they rented a whole village somewhere in the west of the country, and it's about Second World War, and all you have the German soldiers have a separate like camp where they supposedly everyone had to speak German, and the villagers did like the daily normal life stuff for a whole week. And And then now, I think next year, I think they're staging it again next year. Of course, there will be a lot of differences, because back in 2000, I don't think it was that common to take good care of the not the documentation, but the material, like the character sheets and so on and so forth. So I don't know if they'll probably do a lot of rewrites and reimagining, but it's the same. They call it 1942, and it's sort of the same LARP. And I was signed up for the original, and 2 weeks before I called and said, "Look, guys, I have my history exam. I can't pretend I'm a German soldier for a week because I'm reading it to them. And that was a pretty bad priority, I've understood after hearing about this damn LARP for 17 years or whatever.
Oh my gosh. The things we don't know at the time, right? So you're going to get to go this time, and it'll be a totally different experience this time.
I want to try and sign up for that. They'll do one you have to speak the language of the character LARP, so that means you can speak Norwegian or German. Like, you have to be a real German speaking person at least, yeah. And but then the other run is in, I think English is the main language.
Like, is that to select for people who already speak German, or is it like a design intention within? Like, I wonder, like, how common is it for people in Norway to speak German?
I think they'll invite German players.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Or like, if you're a Norwegian with a good enough German, you can come play the soldier. But I think the point of that is the really old idea of the, you know, the 360 degree illusion, or will aim for some kind of authenticity, or it will somehow help your play experience and to that things seem like real.
Right, right. A sort of an aesthetic kind of immersion. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This word immersion is always... In Norwegian, we have a word called innlevelse, and it means like when you can get innlevelse when you're watching a movie or reading a book, you're getting into it, you know, you're empathizing with the characters, you're seeing clear pictures, you're at the horror movie, you might get afraid for real. Do you have a word for that in English, which is not as highfalutin as?
I wonder, because I think actually people who don't talk about games all the time do say that they're really immersed in a book, a movie, or something like that. But then for some reason, as soon as you start talking about being immersed in a game, we start trying to figure out, oh, what does that exactly mean, and how can we recreate that, and what are the different kinds of immersion, and how do we elicit it? And so I don't know, I'm glad it's just a more common word, because I think people do use it sort of intuitively a lot to just say, I was really into it, I was really feeling it.
And I mean, if that's what is meant by the word immersion, I'd say it's what's the word?
Incontrovertible.
Like, yeah, you can't argue that this thing is not real, right? But if you start going more metaphysical or more out there interpretations like that, of course you may have more of explaining to do, right?
Yes, absolutely. And then if we start defining what immersion is, then we can start saying whether or not someone else was feeling it, rather than just using it as a way to describe our own experiences. We could talk more about that. You seem like you're about to say something.
No, I was thinking I don't really want to go down the rabbit hole of immersion definition. In general, I try to avoid these definition debates because... they rarely, I find, seem to like produce anything constructive or...
Yeah, not a lot of yield. Not very generative. Yeah, totally. I agree. I want to talk to you about the Itresby Menagerie and that project.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is a game that has existed for a long time, and... now it's going to have this, there's a reprint and a sort of accompanying anthology, is that it?
The book is still available on Drive-Thru, the core book, but what we've done, we started working on it in January, and just started talking loosely on Google+, that wouldn't it be cool if we made some kind of anthology or supplement, and the basic idea was a bit like this fanzine ideal that everyone can just write like a page each, or just this like a really small compact sort of supplement. But I guess you could say it grew. So you have some supplements that are or contributions for the anthology that are I don't know, 7-8 pages long, and we've got illustrations. We have 35 people, I think, involved from 10 different countries.
Mm-hmm. And you've got some heavy hitters in there, right? You mentioned Kat Jones is doing an article on costuming. I know Emily Kerr Boss and Evan Torner and a bunch of other really cool people who I have either had or would like to have on the show, actually, are contributing various things.
Yeah, that's what I've been finding funny when I've looked at your playlist from the show, is that, well, I sort of know half of these people. No, you know Banana Chan?
Oh yeah,
the freeform author. She has done kind of a poetic, very interesting and quirky little freeform game about something called the Grimasques, mm-hmm. which are concept in the book, and they make a face while when the wind turns, mm-hmm. and then it gets stuck. So they're grimaced, and they're sort of outcasts in society. So she's doing some kind of interesting riffs with what is a fairly silly concept in essence from our original mm-hmm. depiction. For the first time, there will be character sheets made by Polish designer Karina Gry. Mm-hmm. Becky Anderson and Joshua Fox from Great Britain, who have this year they launched their Lovecraft-esque. They've done an article on playing the game without a GM. Caitlin Bell, who is another freeform designer, did a thing called Lunacy, illustrated by Thomas Novoso. Guy from the Philippines called Toby Abad has done a thing called Imperium Manila, which is a new district for the city based on the mythology of the Philippines. And I kind of enjoyed that just because in the core book, the things we describe are a bit mostly Western Europe in the 20s. That's the general vibe. So I thought it was cool to just say, well, bam, here's a district from an altogether different kind of flavor, right?
Yeah, totally. And, you know, you mentioned that really the ethos of HRSP is to say, this is the setting, but the whole point of the setting is that you can make stuff up and make it your own and make it meaningful to you, like a dream. So it's kind of cool to be able to offer people this series of examples of people making it their own and interpreting them it themselves.
Yeah, I'm just so like proud and grateful of all these like excellent eggs stepping up and doing this kind of work. The contributors cut, including Maya and Martins, is going to Doctors Without Borders. And I've seen now like a sketch for the cover, which is absolutely in the right direction and very like very talented guy that. And Karsten Dumm, who runs Vagrant Workshop, he's about halfway through with the first round of layouts. So it seems that it will become a real thing, and maybe
it will exist.
It will exist in spring.
That's very exciting. It sounds like it's just something you're really jazzed about, especially because you get to work with lots of different designers. I know, for example, Banana Chan, you were playtesting her Golden Cobra game, which is this like video LARP. I actually know very little about it. Please tell me about that exciting playtest that you were in.
Yeah, I thought it was a very elegant design. You get like, it's just 2 pages long, and it's on the Golden Cobra, and it will also be in some anthology soon. But you get daily prompts. They're on to me. That's the name of the game. And you get daily prompts for a video message that you will record. And you're asked to keep it to, I don't know, a minute or 3 minutes, or just keep it brief. And what happens is you sort of, there's enough room that you can actually build a story yourself, but you get a lot of prompts and some help with reincorporation. And yeah, so I did that over, I don't know, 11 days. And she hacked together. I sent them, every day I sent them the videos and try to make a good finale for them. So,
and she's a talented video editor as well, so she put together a very upsetting trailer for her game based on your footage, which I believe ends with you naked covered in blood, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I thought that was sort of a good sort of finale or send-off.
Yeah, very very punchy. That's good. That's quality stuff.
And after that, my Astrid, my girlfriend, was filming, and I did the last scene when I was saying, like, the it's only a game. And then I looked up at Astrid, and I realized that she was still recording. So instead of, like, asking her to actually cut, I just got up naked and covered in theater blood and started giving, like, playtest feedback to to these guys.
Very helpful. So, very helpful.
I'm a very helpful dude.
Yeah. People covered in blood usually are. What other games are you playing right now that you're really jazzed about?
I'll, for the first time, try Lady Blackbird tomorrow.
Oh, really? That is exciting.
I've written, oh, this week I wrote a supplement for Draug 2, which is a game Matthijs is doing. He wrote like, Norwegian Draug was sort of fudge-based and... No, what's it called? Fate? No, before Fate.
I think Fudge came first.
Yeah, that one. And it's about Norwegian folklore, but it was in Norwegian. And now he's doing an English version, which has a totally different system, but the same kind of setting. And I've been writing this week just a brief list, just some cards, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 pages, of a setting that is set in the 1980s in a place very similar to where I grew up outside of Oslo, and it has all these same supernatural critters and things from the Norwegian old folklore that is described in the core game. Would you be interested in hearing just like an excerpt?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Give us some spoken word.
Okay, would you be interested in hearing about a monster or a place or...
Oh, a monster, definitely.
Okay, we got the... we got 4. It's Nøkken, who lives in ponds and wants to get people to drown.
Mm-hmm.
We got a changeling, basically, called Bytting. And we got the Huldr, who is a beautiful woman luring men into the... She wants to trap them in stone in the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a guy who's a bit like, it's called Nissa. He's like little people. He's like a gnome almost.
Mm. I want to hear about the guy who lives in ponds and lures people in.
Okay. Nøkken. He beckons from a forest lake, far from the lights of Ytre. Invites you to his grand green hall to drown in the muddy waters. He's especially eager to meet pregnant women and unbaptized children. More of the latter these days. Sometimes he looks like something floating on the lake. Or a charming young hiker. Often he's invisible. Maybe you will see his true shape. A face with floating hair, beard, and large eyes waiting by the water's edge. By then... It is too late.
Ooh, marvelous. That is some good monster stuff.
I've been a bit inspired by this movie, Swedish movie called Let the Right One Come In.
Oh, Let the Right One In. Yeah, I love that movie with the sad vampires.
Yeah, he often works with more like pop cultural horror creatures, but he also has some of these like more folkloristic fairy tale creatures.
Cool. So you're kind of building a very, very tiny monster manual, a monster booklet.
Yeah, it's only I've described four of the monsters, but you can also recycle some from the 1801 playset that he has done. And also you get some good description about Norwegian social democracy in the 1980s.
Right. So it's kind of you could really build a little Norwegian Stranger Things, I guess.
Yeah, I hope so.
That's pretty cool.
There's a name list of like funky names you can use for characters.
That's very helpful. I'm definitely of the strong opinion that every game should come with a list of names.
Yeah. We have one of those in the menagerie as well. I hasten to add.
Good, done, sold. Glad to hear it. This pleases me. Well, why don't we wrap it up? If my listeners want to learn more about you, hear about what you're up to, follow some of your work, what's the best place for them to do that?
Google Plus would work, or just, I don't know. Yeah, mostly that, actually.
Yeah, cool. Everybody get on Google Plus already.
Yay.
Yeah. Well, thanks again to Olpeta for coming in. And as always, thank you for listening. If you have questions about the show or you just want to get in touch, you can always send an email to backstorypodcast@gmail.com, or you can tweet at me at backstorycast. Backstory is part of the One Shot Podcast Network. And over the next couple of episodes, as I have for the last few episodes, I'd like to tell you about some of the shows on our network. Modifier is hosted by my podcast sister, Megan Dornbrock. It's a smart, focused discussion show about hacking, modding, porting, and otherwise making games do things they simply were not meant to do. What I love about Modifier is that while she does feature well-known designers in commercially successful projects, Megan is just as interested, I think, in the small scale and the personal, games that will never get played outside of one convention or someone's home group. I appreciate that focus, and I think you will too. You can check out Modifier and many other wonderful shows at oneshotpodcast.com. Music for Backstory is provided by Ujiko. The track is called Thinkin' of You, and you can find more at soundcloud.com/UJICO. Talk to you next year, heroes.